Tonight, a very special Encore edition of 7 Second Delay, an episode that originally aired 25 years ago on April 1st, 1992. This is the Confessions episode, which we lost 15 minutes of, so there's only 45 minutes of Confessions. And then we will be airing an excerpt from the infamous Tollbooth Collector episode. But here from April 1st, 1992... is the Confessions episode of 7 Second Delay.
Okay. We're on the air. There's nothing they can do about it. It's a 7 Second Delay. My name is Andy. I'm here with my friend Ken. Our James Bond theme song is fading out. People ask me, do I have any connection with the James Bond series? The answer is no, except I was Roger Moore's stunt double in To Live and Let Die, but that's really the only connection I have. You might want to rent that tonight. That's me falling out of the plane. But that's a whole other show. Tonight we're going to talk about things we've done that we're sort of ashamed of, things we've done that we've never confessed to anyone. We should have a special line dedicated to Bill Clinton. I made a Bill Clinton joke. I guess I'll start off our little confessional show. It's good for the soul, confession. And this is something that I've often thought about and often regretted, but hey, I was 23. I had no idea what I was doing. I used to work in the 2nd Avenue Cinema in Lower Manhattan. It's no longer there, partly because of the story I'm about to tell you. I used to work at the candy counter. And I was paid minimum wage, not good enough for me, and I used to make extra money by skimming money from the candy counter proceeds. And this is how I did it. The inventory for the popcorn was kept by how many popcorn boxes were left at the end of each shift. That's how the owners knew how many you sold. You started with 100, there were 80 left at the end of the shift, you sold 80 popcorn boxes, and... What I used to do, and my friends, I was not alone in this, what I used to do is go into the theater between shows, go down the aisle, down the rows, and collect the used popcorn boxes. The buckets of popcorn that people had discarded during the last movie.
And all your coworkers did this also?
The cool ones did. The ones that have James Bond theme songs. And... we would bring them back to the candy counter, fill them with popcorn, and then resell them. And those resold popcorn buckets were, of course, all profit, all going into my pocket. Am I proud of this? No, I'm not at all. But I confess it freely because that's the show we're doing tonight. It's the worst things you've ever done. Now, I don't think anyone is going to top that. That's pretty disgusting. That's reselling popcorn that these junkies in the Lower East Side were eating just 20 minutes ago. That's pretty bad, but I confess it freely. Now, Ken...
That's nothing.
Well...
That's nothing.
I
can think of three or four things that are worse than that.
I don't think you understood. These were used popcorn buckets. Clearly, you didn't understand the seriousness of this.
Well... I did something really, really quite shameful. And it was last summer after I hurt myself and I was in the hospital at Peekskill Community Hospital. And I was sharing a hospital room with this old guy, and he was in pretty bad shape. He was dying, I guess. And one afternoon he took a serious turn for the worse, and they brought in a whole bunch of new IVs and gizmos and respirators, and they put the guy on a respirator, and he was bad. He was making a lot of noise. He was in pain, and it went on all night long, and I could not sleep because of this guy's noises. And he was like whistling and wheezing and doing all sorts of things, and I just wanted to get sleep. That was my only concern. So I went over to his bed just to see, you know, what this whistling noise was, and it was like something having to do with this mask over his face, and it sounded like it was kind of a kazoo effect. There was like a piece of paper or some kind of tissue in this respirator.
Now this is you in the middle of the night,
yeah,
sneaking over Oh, no.
Yeah.
And,
I just wanted to, there was this whistling that was coming out of the guy's respirator that I just wanted to put an end to. So I just like lifted it a little bit and just like tried to adjust it a little bit, and it made it a little quieter. That was good enough for me, and I didn't want to do anything more than that. And then I got back into bed. About 5 minutes later, all these alarms went off. All these orderlies ran into the room, and the guy hemorrhaged and he died, or something happened.
The guy what?
The guy died.
You cannot be serious.
I am serious. And all these, the really weird thing was that I couldn't believe what was happening.
So there must have been an investigation.
No, I couldn't believe what was happening in front of me, because what happened is all these orderlies and nurses and doctors came in and they started screaming at one another, and people noticed that his respirator had been tampered with, and everybody was questioning this one young male nurse about what did you do, and like everybody all of a sudden they just like launched onto him, and he basically like admitted it. He more
well,
or less.
Wait, excuse me for laughing, but Ken, so this guy was taking the fall for this.
He basically, he didn't admit it, but he sort of admitted that it was a possibility that he did it.
And, oh, my God.
And he took the fall for it.
And stunned.
And they wheeled me out. They put me in another room. They left that guy there. And I just, and that was it. They never even, nobody even mentioned it to me again. And I've felt, ever since then, I've had this, I feel like I probably was.
Yes, you may have been. Yes, you adjusted his medication. Yeah, you may have been responsible.
Well, it was his respirator. It wasn't really medication. It was.
And
just,
now how do you live with yourself? I have a hard enough time with these dirty popcorn baskets.
Well, I felt that the guy was, you know, he was near comatose anyway. He was real old.
Oh, yeah, sure. We're rationalizing it. He was real old.
Yeah, and he probably, you know, and I feel bad, but
so
I'm
not. It's like he lived a long and fruitful life.
Yeah.
And somebody else needed the bed. Oh, my God. I'm just
I do feel
stunned.
Bad about it. I feel terrible about it, but it's not like, it would have been a completely different thing if it had been somebody my age or, you know, somebody young. And
also,
you don't understand. I'm not convinced. Well, I don't know. I feel several different ways about it, but I'm not absolutely convinced that I was responsible for the guy's death, because
Did you pipe up? I think there were two outrages here. Number one, tampering with this octogenarian's medicine at 3 a.m. But number two, watching this young nurse take the fall. I mean, how do you live with yourself? How can you live with that?
I feel like the guy.
All right. Well, listen. Who am I to judge you? I leave that to Jesse Helms to judge people. You've made your decision in life. You've made your lifestyle choices. I'm not going to judge you, but I've got to say something. I thought my St. Mark's Place basket of popcorn story was pretty bad, and that was until I met Mr. Ken Friedman. I've learned a lot today, and I'm going to tell you, I think I'm going to sleep a lot better tonight. We are at, as always, 201-678-7743, and we are confessing to the worst things we ever did. You just heard my co-host confess to, I'm not a lawyer, I believe the technical word is murder.
Come on.
Well, what would you call it?
I don't know. Malpractice. Patient,
yeah,
patient malpractice.
Well, I'm just completely stunned and outraged. I would love to hear what other people have to say. I'm sure nothing will come close to that. We're at 201-678-7743, and we're asking you for confessions, and the phones are not ringing at all. I guess no one is man enough or big enough or womanly enough to step forward and confess to something they've done. I guess we're all living perfect lives out there, eh? The tri-state area is filled with angels. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hello.
Yeah, thanks for calling.
Hi, I heard your topic of your show is the worst thing you've ever done.
The worst things we've ever done, yes, sir.
I was a pharmaceutical student about 10 years ago, and I poisoned a friend of mine.
There, you see that? I told you I wasn't the
only. You mean you accidentally gave him some sort of overdose in the course of a...
Well, I don't even know if I should be talking about it.
No, go ahead.
Well, that's why we're here.
Go ahead. You got to get me off the hook.
Yeah.
Here,
let me introduce you to your cohort, Ken. You two will be spending a lot of time in hell together.
Actually, I just turned on the radio. I didn't hear what he had to say.
It's not unlike your story, but go on. You were a pharmaceutical student.
That's right.
And you implied that this poisoning was not entirely accidental.
Well, we used to try to make up various things, you know.
Oh.
It was something that we would do just to amuse ourselves. And it was someone who was a friend of mine, I should say. And I had I really don't know if I should be talking.
Well, please go on, sir. This is a friend of yours.
Right.
You are amusing yourself with drugs. With pharmaceuticals.
Amphetamine sulfate.
Amphetamine sulfate. I'm proud to say I don't know what that means.
Speed.
That's speed.
It's,
I've had speed up to my nose, but I've never inhaled.
It was, the problem was that it was a dose that was normally reserved for horses or cattle.
Oh, and my gosh.
It was 300 milligrams.
Oh, my gosh. And this is, you had someone willingly accept a needle full of this?
Well, it, no.
Oh, my God.
I dissolved it in water.
You mean you gave it to him, he didn't know what it was?
That's right. I wanted to see what would happen.
Like an experiment?
You might say.
Oh, no.
And it's unfortunate that it did bring about his untimely demise.
Yeah, unfortunate's an interesting word.
But who's still suffering? The caller. He's the one who's suffering now, not the guy who died.
Although, if you're weighing victimhood here, I would say the guy who died has a better case. Maybe you and Ken will be spending time in a jail together.
I didn't hear what he had done.
He inadvertently, that's a word you didn't use, inadvertently killed someone in a hospital bed next to him. Now, sir, was there an investigation into this death?
No, because he basically, the way he died really wasn't from an overdose of amphetamine. He died because he decided to get behind the wheel of his auto.
Oh my God. So you can't really hold yourself responsible.
He died in a horrible, it was a head-on collision on the M6 is what it was.
Oh my God. And are you a doctor now, sir?
I'd rather not say.
Yeah, you know, we talk about, like, problems with healthcare in this country. I would say the first thing to address would be you, sir, frankly.
First of all, I'm not a U.S. citizen, so I couldn't be a doctor in this country, so I don't think that there's anything for you to worry about if you're implying that perhaps I've killed other people.
Wait a minute. You have no right to get outraged at me or offended at me. You're walking around, you're a murderer. How do you feel about that?
Look, if he had decided to spend the night
at home, come on.
Perhaps watching television or something.
Yeah, what a cop-out.
I'm not the one who put him behind.
Right. Let's blame Lee Iacocca. Let's put Lee Iacocca. Come on, you are the one.
I didn't put him behind the wheel of the Cooper.
Right, how do you know that the car accident had anything to do with the amphetamines?
You mean if the amphetamine capsule has your name on it, it's going to happen anyway.
That's exactly right.
All right, well, that's a very interesting philosophy of life. If you do practice medicine in this country, give us a little notice.
I don't like what you're implying. I don't like the implication.
I don't like the story I just heard. Excuse my outrage. Thank you very much for calling. Thank you. I wonder what the problems are.
You see that, Mr. Self-Righteous?
Wait a minute.
I was the only one out there who had maybe at some
point. All right,
point...
so there are two, but wait a minute. You can't get down on me. You're both wrong. You... Don't preclude the possibility that you're both criminals. Let's take the next call.
Okay.
Hi, we're confessing things we've done. We are at 678-7743. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, I heard the first fella's story.
Yeah.
And the one who was just on, so I guess it's maybe about time.
Oh, my gosh. Right. What are you? You stole some office supplies, I'm guessing.
In the late 70s, early 80s, I was in a college in... the southeastern part of Massachusetts, and I'm an FMU listener, so I'm kind of, you know, I guess I don't even know if you need to say any more there.
Proud we are to have you in the
family. Well, I mean, just, you know, maybe a little bit artistic, you know, a little more sensitive.
Okay, so you're a sensitive man. You're in Massachusetts.
Yeah.
Come on.
And basically, I roomed with a bunch of Neanderthals in this college dorm.
Okay.
And there was this one fellow who was a Marine. You know, he was going to college on the Marine bill, whatever it was.
Yeah.
And he took a particular dislike to me, and he used to call me some names I can't say on the radio.
Well, we appreciate it.
Yeah. A lot. And
yeah.
Do your basic college, you know, student thing. So.
Yeah.
So he humiliated you.
Yeah. At every opportunity, you know, pinning me in the room, you know. Once he and a couple of his buddies got together, and like it was like there was a hall in the middle, you know, that separated me from the girls. That separated the boys' suite from the girls.
Right.
And like they said, oh, we're gonna have a push-up contest. So I was dumb, you know. I did. And like they threw me out naked in the hall.
Anyway. So you pulled a prank to get back on them. Is that the point? You pulled some kind of gag.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead. What was the gag?
Well, the one thing this guy really loved was his Trans Am.
Okay.
So I went under the hood one Friday afternoon.
Yeah.
To that Trans Am and dumped in about a quart of aquarium sand.
What does that do?
In the crankcase.
Okay, so that ruined his crankcase. I'm not a mechanic. What happens?
Well, it sort of has a delayed effect.
Okay.
You know, you drive for, I don't know, 20 minutes or something like that.
Okay. Well, sir, if this is the worst thing you ever did, I got to say you can relax and sleep easy.
And basically the engine just gives out totally.
All right, so he had to fix
his
engine.
The car stops dead.
Okay.
And he stopped dead.
Right.
About 10 o'clock at night while he was merging on an interstate.
So he sounded very inconvenienced.
Okay. Well, he kind of got hit by a semi.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, no. Are we talking about another dead person?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, he died.
Oh, my gosh. I cannot. You know, I started the show thinking I would hear shoplifting stories. Oh, my God. And they must have found the sand. I mean, the police must have done an investigation, right?
The car was like a twisted ribbon. I mean,
sir, is this the first time you've ever told this story?
This is. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. And how do you feel? These must have been horrible years for you.
Well, it was bad, but I also think, like, you know, those guys...
Don't say it. That they deserved it? They had it coming?
Yeah, you know, less of those kind of guys you have in the world, the better. I mean, he would just end up killing some more people before he went.
Oh, don't pull that crap on me.
Sort of saved the world a few, you know.
And the same hold true for the driver of the semi, by the way?
Oh, he wasn't, you know, he wasn't hurt as bad.
Oh, God.
I mean, those things are big, you know. He was,
did they ever investigate?
He basically walked away from it.
So this is so you've spent the last 3 or 4 years of your life just rationalizing this crime.
I don't think I'm rationalizing.
Well, I think you certainly are, sir. This is murder. This is or manslaughter.
I mean, I feel bad. Like, I feel bad for his family. I feel bad for his girlfriend and everything like that.
Oh,
but I don't think that this guy's like a tremendous loss to the world or anything.
Did they ever investigate and find sand in the crankcase?
He said it was total.
I mean, they basically, you know, they wiped the car off the highway with a Kleenex, and they did an autopsy on him, and he had been out bar hopping that night, so he had alcohol in his blood, so they just figured it was like a DWI fatality. Mm. I was like standing by, like biting my fingernails down to the nub, while all this was going on, but like nothing happened.
Well, I'm glad you called. I'm glad to know that.
Yeah, I know you've made Ken's day. This is just absolutely outrageous. We've taken a few calls, and we're talking to murderers and liars. It's a very sad commentary. You know, aren't there any misdemeanors being committed out there? I mean, it's all felonies out there.
You wanted, you know, I got to go.
Okay,
yeah,
bye.
I think you do. Boy, that's a good friend to have. FMU must be very proud of its listeners.
We are.
Yeah. Well, let's. This is unbelievable. The phones are lit up, and I'm almost afraid to take the next call. Hi, we're at 678-7743. 201 area code. We are talking about the worst things we ever did.
Hi. Andy, Ken.
Yes, hi.
I've got a story for you.
Well, I hope it's something that we can laugh about.
Well, it is a shameful story.
Okay.
This happened about 6 years ago when I was living in Lower Manhattan.
Yeah.
And I was working as a go-go dancer. And I was inebriated most of the time. And spent a good amount of energy and money maintaining that state. Now, a friend of mine who was a regular at one of the bars that I worked at approached me and asked me to help him entertain a friend of his who was visiting from out of town. And when he further explained that his friend was the son of a very wealthy family and that he lived on a trust fund and had a big appetite for cocaine, I said, well, all right, because that was my drug. I love cocaine. So,
So this is getting to some kind of drug connection. This is getting you were hooked up with this guy.
Well, yeah, sure. I mean, that's why he wanted me along. So, sure enough, the guy arrived and he pretty much hit the ground running. He had a little stash, and we did that up in no time. And then it was up to me and, you know, the cop, and I did my job, and we ran around in cabs, like, between Manhattan and Queens.
This is already a shameful story. I'm almost afraid to hear the rest of this.
Do you want me to go on?
Well, I'm afraid I do.
So, as I said, we spent most of our time in cabs, you know, doing it up and turn on cab drivers. And he bought a whole case of Cordon Bleu, and he was drinking that like it was water. And we'd go to fancy restaurants and order lavish meals that we couldn't eat because we were too high. Well, we were having an all-around good time. And this went on for 2 days. We were up all night. And by the second night, well, he was scheduled to leave on the third day.
Right.
So the second night, he really wanted to do it up good.
Right.
And he wanted heroin. And I didn't care much for heroin. I just wasn't interested in it, but I knew where to cop it. So we went to the Lower East Side and got him some dope and works, and then we went back to my friend's apartment. And it was in like a low-rent area, and, you know, we just sat around. At this point, we're maintaining this delicate balance between paranoia and euphoria.
Yeah.
And
I lived there for a couple of years.
Right. Oh. And the guy boots up, you know, and then he gets real mellow and stuff, and he's enjoying himself. And then he just kind of gently passes out. So,
yeah. They're sweet looking when they do that, aren't they? They sleep like babies, don't they?
Like a big baby.
Yeah.
So 45 minutes, maybe it was 2 hours later, I don't know. We thought we should rouse him.
Got it.
And
then where'd you go?
He didn't move. And
he didn't move.
No. No, and we...
Does WFMU have its own, like, cemetery somewhere where people just bury their victims?
I just don't think it's that unusual. I bet there's a lot of people out
there. Apparently, you're right. This is amazing. So this man was deceased.
You
partied this man to death.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's the idea when you do drugs.
I
mean, ultimately... That's...
So you didn't kill him with a gun. You killed him with your infectious little girlish charms.
See, when you put it that way.
Yeah, when I put it that way. And how do you feel about this, looking back at it?
Well, I am in recovery.
That doesn't make up for this. Now, did you report this to...
Well, that's the interesting part. You know, it's difficult to get arrested for this. Now,
Now, this is not unlike the Belushi story, actually, in some ways, isn't it?
Yeah,
and she,
I thought you...
She managed...
You wouldn't bring that up.
Yeah, she managed to get herself arrested.
Well, you know, we had to call the cops.
Yeah.
I mean, all I wanted to do was just get out of there. I reacted in the most pusillanimous way possible.
Yeah.
I was just... I was terrified, but I was too terrified to move. Or else I'd lost my motor coordination. I don't know. But
your friend wasn't
moving
either, but for different reasons. We're laughing about it.
And,
Well, you have to laugh, you know, at a certain point.
You don't have to laugh. No. Laughing
homicide
is optional.
Homicide relieves tension.
No, homicide, oh, that is not. Listen, I have my kids listening. Homicide does not relieve tension.
Okay, thanks for calling.
I'm going to say thank you very much for calling. Homicide relieves tension. Boy, I hope she sends her pledge in. This is just getting sadder and sadder. We are at 678-7743, and we are swapping confessions, and we're just spinning down this dark pit of despair together. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I have a confession.
Yeah, good.
Your caller talked about the traffic accident. Kind of reminded me of something I haven't thought about for quite a while. I was, it's kind of a simple thing. It wasn't my fault at all, but I was driving on the interstate in Chicago, and, you know, I was talking to my friend, and we were goofing around, and I just cut over into the other lane.
Yeah.
And I heard screeching.
Yeah.
And I looked behind me, and I guess I cut off this car, and he was doing 360s down the interstate. And, I watched that for a while, and then I heard collision, and there was a big pileup. And
so you.
I just went off, and I exited it.
So you, in your negligence, you caused a major pileup.
It wasn't a major pileup, but yeah, I did. I probably caused an accident.
Oh, I see. We're getting very technical here. How many cars were involved in this?
Three.
And
my car wasn't involved.
I don't know whether to thank the Lord for that or not. Did anyone get hurt here?
Well, yeah, actually, the passenger of the station wagon, the car that I cut off, was killed.
I'm telling you, Andy.
The driver was injured, but nobody. The other two cars involved weren't hurt.
What were your feelings that night? I mean, what were you thinking? What have you thought since?
Well, I haven't thought about it for years, and this happened like.
How could you not think about it?
Well, I thought about it then a lot.
Did you like kind of alternate between numbness and anxiety? That's what it was like for me.
There was a lot of anxiety. I mean, first of all, I was, I was mortified, and I felt really bad, and I didn't know whether I should call the cops. And actually, I was waiting for them to call me. That's the other thing I felt was scared.
Sure.
I thought, somebody's going to get my license plate, and that I was going to get a call, and I was going to be involved in the whole thing and blamed, but as it turns out, nothing ever happened. There's no consequence to me, and I didn't know what happened at first, and then the next day I read the local papers. And
now, when you're on the road now driving, are you super conservative and super cautious now?
Yeah, I mean,
did it change your life in any way?
No, I don't think that changed my life. I mean, it was an accident, and frankly, if the guy had been a better driver, I don't think.
Oh, how can you? Number one, you're talking about the passenger, right?
Right. Right. I mean, I'm sorry.
And number two, you began the story by saying you were distracted and you cut someone off.
Well, I cut someone off, but that doesn't, it's no need for them.
That's why you have to drive defensively, yeah.
Oh, this is like a course in blaming the victim. This is like blaming the victim 101.
I think we all share some blame.
It's not blaming
the victim. Oh, we don't all share some blame. I, for example, began by talking about stealing a little money from my boss 10 years ago.
Your popcorn container might have been contaminated by somebody.
Oh God! Oh, listen to you guys rationalize.
Right? What if there'd be salmonella?
All the time. You just don't hear about it.
One caller after another.
People don't want to talk about
with
it.
A story like this, and you're still acting like it's this heinous thing.
But I feel a little better.
Yeah. Well, listen. Why don't we invite the family of this deceased passenger into the studio, and you could explain to them, Ken, why it's not such a heinous thing.
Well, if there's anybody out there who's the family of a victim, they can call also. Well, thanks for calling.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks very much for calling. How proud we are of our listeners. We are at 678-7743, and this is. I thought we were going to have a very sort of upbeat, funny show. We were going to swap. Stealing office supply stories, and there's no end to it. Let's take the next call.
Well, Andy, you know what John Houston in Chinatown, remember that line at the end?
Mr.
Gittes, we're all capable of doing horrible things at one
that
time or another.
That is not true. And you know what? If accidents happen and you do something horrible, like excuse me for including you in this, you and everyone else that seems to be living in the tri-state area tonight, you fess up to it. You accept responsibility.
Unless you're not...
It's called adulthood. We'll look it up together after the show.
Unless it's not so clear...
Oh, but you don't get to judge if someone is dead. You have to report it.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Well, I think my situation was... such that I think morally, I've always felt I was in the right. I mean, I've had to, but I've always felt morally that the whole situation worked in such a way that I really had no choice.
Well, I'd like to hear this story.
Well, I'm a psychiatrist, and it was about 15, 18 years ago. I was in the Midwest. I was interning at a hospital in the psychiatric emergency room, and this patient comes in, this woman who is psychotic, severely psychotic, suicidal, and over the course of the 72 hours that she was on the psych ER, she developed a fixation on me. And that seemed therapeutic, but it lasted way beyond the constraints of the thing, and she eventually went up to the ward. She spent a period in the schizophrenic ward at that hospital, and then she started to write me letters when she got out. She started to write me letters, and she found my address.
Right. Okay.
She started to call and to come, and
okay,
she appeared in my apartment building. There's other things.
Mm. Okay. She was unstable, but you had a professional responsibility.
Yes.
Okay. Go on.
Well, eventually I went to the police because I was really, I mean, my then girlfriend, later my wife, and I was really made very nervous by this, and took all the things to the police, and she'd never actively threatened me, so it was very difficult for them to do anything. It was a pure case of erotomania, but such wasn't recognized. I mean, this is before John Lennon, this is before some of the more recent cases where there have been, you know, situations like this. And,
did you end up?
Well, she eventually. At one point, I had the police call her or pick her up when she was loitering outside my building, and they brought her to the emergency room where I was working. They plonked her right in front of me.
I cannot believe that.
Yeah, well, that's where they would take psychiatric people. So they brought her right front, plunked her in front of me, and
okay,
the situation revolved from there.
And what is the bottom line to all this?
I moved. She followed me. Whole long sequence of events. Eventually, I found out where she lived.
And your confession is?
I tracked her down.
You tracked her down?
I found where she lived.
And you talked to her.
And
confronted her.
I mapped out her life as well as I could.
You're talking about stalking her now.
Well, she was stalking me. This is after five years.
Here we go. I've been down this road all afternoon. Right. And then what is the bottom line to this?
Well,
you confronted her.
Well, I confronted her many times. I confronted her.
What is the bottom line to this? You got a restraining order. You went to the police.
We went through that. The restraining order didn't do anything.
Okay, and what did you do, sir?
I hit her with my car. I waited for her to cross the street in this dark neighborhood where she lived. I hit her with the car.
See, now that's,
I dragged her.
That's premeditated. That's where I draw the line.
Oh, thanks, Ken. Thanks for joining us finally. Sir, you're a psychiatrist. You're a professional man.
And also, he's a psych.
How can you sit across from patients now and live with yourself and try to help other people?
Well, we all have to find our limits. She had broken mine. She had threatened my children.
You have no remorse.
Huh. I have no remorse. No. No, she was.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much for calling. You certainly brightened my day.
I don't know. That kind of makes sense. If, you know, she threatened the guy's kids.
We're at 678-7743. You know, if we were talking about some dock worker, I would say, well, that's a guy that had no other way to retaliate, perhaps. But this is a psychiatrist who's trained to handle these people. And that's what makes it unforgivable is the word. I'm afraid to take the next call. Hi, we're talking about the worst things you ever did. Please, brighten my day. Hi, you're on the air.
I drowned someone.
What?
You what?
I drowned someone.
You drowned someone?
Yes, I did.
And how did this happen?
Well, it happened a long time ago. And where I am from, there's a lot of water and a lot of bicycles. And here I was on my bicycle going along the water, and I saw a person in the water. And I heard him screaming. Later on, it turned out to be an older man. So I grabbed my bicycle, kicked off my shoes, and jumped in the water, trying to reach him. And when I was there, he was still with his head above the water every now and then, and he grabbed me. He grabbed me because he was so panicked. And that moment, I jumped in the water to help him, but he was almost choking me.
Yeah, and so then I got scared. You were trying to help him.
He was trying to pull her down.
Yeah, he was so panicked.
Oh, no,
and he,
no.
Then I,
so you made a conscious decision that he had to go?
Yes.
Okay, thanks for calling.
It was both of us.
Thank you. Thank you for calling. Thank you for calling. This is a Murder Incorporated here, suddenly, at 678-7950.
I think you're really underestimating just how many people out there have situations like this.
We're at, as always, 678... Oh, I just... 7743. I am...
That's downstairs.
Yeah, I read it wrong. This is amazing. We're swapping confessions and the worst things we ever did. Please, sir, have a shoplifting story.
I'm sorry, I don't have a shoplifting story.
Well, please, sir, then tell us the worst thing you ever did.
Well, in 1983, I accidentally killed my twin brother.
Okay, you accidentally killed your twin brother. You mean it was some kind of car accident that you were driving? He was a passenger?
No, it wasn't anything like that, actually. I jimmied the brakes on his moped. I didn't mean for him to die, but I jimmied the brakes on his moped so that he would hurt himself. And
see, let me reacquaint you with the word accidentally, sir. This is not an accident you're talking about. This is...
Well, it was an accident that he died. I didn't mean for him to die. I just meant for him to get hurt a little
bit. Well, how could you map out exactly how he was going to fall?
Well...
He wasn't on some kind of controlled obstacle course, was he?
No, I didn't think of it at the time. I didn't have enough foresight. It was the first time I'd ever jimmied anybody's brakes.
Oh, I see. So you were an amateur at this?
Yes. This is my first and only attempt.
And how have you lived with it? This must be worse than anything. It's your twin brother. Did you fess up to it at the time?
No. No, this is the first time I'm revealing it to anybody other than my therapist.
I am, I have to say I'm appalled, as I'm sure your therapist was. Didn't she advise you to talk to the authorities?
She thought about it at once, but...
Yeah, because she's a professional therapist. I just have one last question. How can you look your parents in the eyes? Are you going home for the holidays soon?
I still live with my parents.
Oh, you still live with your parents. What do you say to them over dinner?
We just make the normal small talk. They love me more than ever. They don't.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, because now you're their only son.
Absolutely. I get all the attention now. It used to be split in half.
Oh, this is obscene. This is like, you know, the orphan that pleads for leniency because the guy who killed his parents that pleads for leniency because he's an orphan.
Probably nothing like that, but thank you.
Well, yeah. Thank you for calling, and we'll take the next call. This is...
You shouldn't be so self-righteous with these people. I don't, you know...
Oh, excuse me. When you have a knife and you're cutting brake linings...
Obviously, they've done some terrible things. But
you forfeit the right for sympathy in this world. We are at 678-7743, and we are taking confessions. We are talking about the worst thing you ever did. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, my name is John Smith.
We don't want to know your name.
No, of course, that's not my real name.
Okay.
I haven't even thought about this in the last couple of years.
Okay. This is the worst thing you ever did.
Do you have a murder? Because this is great. I think we should only take murders from now on.
This is just so depressing. I hope, John Smith, in quotes, that your story is very trivial and funny.
Well, no, it's a downer.
Is there a dead person anywhere in?
Oh, I can't believe
in this story.
Well, it was.
It sounds like yes.
Start from the beginning.
Go ahead.
Well, I live out in. I live around Patterson. Of course, not in.
We don't want to know where you live.
Of course, not in Patterson.
Yeah.
You know, but I live in New Jersey. Well, of course.
I got it.
You know,
and you're
not in New Jersey.
And you're local.
Coming in on the expressway. It's crowded as usual in the morning.
Got it.
Get off the expressway. I'm taking side streets. I'm driving to work. And I'm doing pretty good. I'm doing about, 45, 50 miles an hour. get to a street light, and geez, I don't know, it was yellow, red, I think it was more red than yellow.
I'm thinking it was yellow.
It was probably both. You know, it's one of the, it was right between.
Tell it to the judge.
Okay, Mr. Smith,
didn't mean to threaten you with legal action.
Guy steps off the curb, and I smacked him pretty good.
Okay, that's an accident? That happens?
That sounds terrible.
That really sounds terrible.
Well, wait a minute. So what, you reported it? I'm sure you were involved in the legal system.
See, that's where the it gets a little hairy. I never reported it.
Oh man, that's just horrible. By the way, sir,
Ken, have no right to judge after your story. You never reported it.
Well, I never reported it for a couple reasons.
Yeah, but this guy hit a pedestrian.
Go ahead. Why didn't you report
I'm a pedestrian.
Why didn't he looked old? He looked like his life was over. Is that what you're about to say?
No, he was a young guy.
Oh God.
Actually, it was he looked like he was at least in his teens. You know, he was 18, 19 years old.
Rather. And you didn't report it because
No, I didn't think I hit him that hard. I read in the paper the next day that he didn't make it. So he's I guess he was DOA or whatever that.
Yeah, that's the term, sir. DOA.
Yeah.
D stands for dead, sir.
Yeah, I read in the paper he didn't fare all that well, but the reason why I didn't report it, you know, it seems kind of trivial now, but it was years ago, and I was in a different state of mind.
Go ahead.
I have a pretty expensive insurance policy. I'm just getting by. I didn't need those rates to go up.
This went through your mind. You calculated your insurance premiums at the scene of this crime, and then you hit the gas. Is that what you're saying?
Well.
Okay. Thank you.
That's the worst one yet. That's just terrible.
That's the worst one yet. I think you're right in that league, sir. We are at 678-7743. We're talking about the worst things we ever did.
We are hearing
nothing but horror stories.
There's no comparison between what I did and what that guy
Let's
did.
Take
that
the
guy,
next call.
That guy ran down a pedestrian.
I'm ashamed to say our phones are lit up as they have been all evening. Hi, we're swapping confessions.
Hi. I really don't think my confession is as bad as the other people, but I do sort of feel guilty about it, and I guess, you know.
Okay, what is the story?
Well, it happened when I was in high school. I was really young, and this is like the mid-70s, so, you know, this is...
Is there a dead person involved?
Well, there is, but inadvertently there is.
Go ahead.
Well, when I was about 13, 14, I went over to a friend's house, and I was, like, in her bathroom, and I was looking through the medicine cabinet, and I found this jar of pills, and I just thought, you know, that it would be kind of funny if I took them. So I took them, I emptied them out.
Yeah.
And I know plenty of people have done things like this. So,
I used to do stuff like that.
Ken knows plenty of people too.
Well, anyway, what I did was I emptied them out and I filled the jar with vitamins.
Yeah.
And then I took the pills to school.
No, I sold them.
I told people that they were some sort of drug, and you know, and people bought them from me and stuff. But
that's funny because when I was at junior high school, they used to sell vitamins and tell people that they were drugs.
Well, this is the opposite. Well, it turns out that, you know, my friend, she lived with her grandfather, and he had a pretty serious heart condition, and he needed, you know, to take these pills like 3 times a day or something, and he was taking vitamins.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
And like a week and a half later, my friend came in. She was all upset because her grandfather had died.
All right. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for sharing that uplifting little story. This is not exactly.
You were the one who chose the topic for this show.
I chose the worst things you ever did, thinking we were going to just swap sort of, stories about peeking under our sister's dresses when we were 7. This is very discouraging.
That was naive of you.
I guess it was. We are at 678-7743. We're swapping confessions. Hi, go ahead.
Hi, am I on the air?
Yes, you are.
Oh. I just wanted to call in to say that, I killed someone.
Well, thanks very much, for sharing that. Who did you kill? This was an accident, sir?
Uh, Well, yeah, basically it was an accident. I didn't mean to kill him. It was a fellow I worked with.
What's the big deal? It's not so bad. I mean, everyone has accidents. In fact, it's a relief after the stories we've heard to hear an accident.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't set out to kill him. I was upset.
Yeah.
And I was angry, and I wanted to get my point across, but, you know, I didn't mean to. This is a fellow I worked with, we're both carpenters.
Wait, so you say you're angry, so you got into a fight with him?
Yeah, it was out of anger, a fight, right.
That's not an accident. That's not an accident at all. It might
have been.
Well, I say it's an accident because I didn't really mean to kill him. And
well, what happened? How did he die?
Well, what basically happened was, you have to understand this type of guy, that he's constantly nagging. We're both carpenters.
Yeah.
And he's always wanting to borrow my tools. He never has his own tools. He's, can I borrow your screwdriver? Can I borrow your saw? Can I borrow your tape?
Wait, are you saying that's what this argument was about?
That's how it started.
That can get really annoying.
Wait a minute. Really, how can you say that? That's the most true. Oh, wait. No. Aren't carpenters supposed to, almost by definition, be swapping tools all the time?
No, to a carpenter, their tools are their most important thing.
You know,
how many times did he ask to borrow your tools? 100?
Well, it wasn't that many.
All right.
But the point is, you know, I'm a man of the Bible, and the Bible says neither a borrower nor lender be.
Exactly.
No, I cannot.
Exactly.
And that's how I feel. And so, you know, what happened was this guy just kept nagging me. Finally, I hit him in the head with a hammer, and I didn't mean to kill him.
You didn't mean to kill him, but you hit him in the head with a hammer. How many times did you hit him, sir?
How many times? Well, here's your stinking hammer. Six.
Six times, and that was an accidental murder. You just lost your temper.
Look, I don't think there's a jury in this country that would have convicted me.
And that is where it ends for the April 1st, 1992 April Fool's Day show, in which all the callers were staged friends of Andy. And that's where the tape ran out, at the 46-minute mark. So for the next 14 minutes or so, we're going to be playing a couple of tracks from various CDs. Andy performing live at the Bottom Line first. And then a song from his record, Don't Get Killed, Railroad Bill. And then we'll be playing the legendary Toll Booth episode, just a very short excerpt, 6 minutes of harassing toll booth attendants on the highways and byways of New Jersey. But starting us off will be Andy live at the Bottom Line.
I know this isn't supposed to be a contest, but I really hope you like me the best. You know you're in the presence of a master. I have two songs to sing, and I brought a set list with me. So you know. I'm proud to be here. It's for a good cause. What is the cause? Oh, it's a profit deal. Okay. Did I do have a good day? Because then I'd know which one is the... Oh, hell, I'm in tune. The problem is me. Okay. Oh, my God, we're out of milk. So, hey, you know what would be cool? Because this is like for a record. 20 funny folk songs. I just hope they have security at Tower Records when this goes on sale, because I don't want anyone really getting trampled. 20 funny folk songs. Woo! You know, they should have a lottery or something so people don't just show up. 20 funny folk songs. But you know what would be cool? If, like, when I started to sing this song, there was, like, a smattering, not everyone, a smattering of recognition applause, as giving the illusion that you, A, know me, B, like me, and then C, know the song. No, that's way too much. It has to be a little bit, and then I get to do that really cool, hey, thank you. Oh, this will be cool. It now occurs to me the most important part of this plan, this scam, is that the guy who edits the record not include this speech. So if I could, I'd like to address the guy who's editing the tape. Hey, hey you, jerkwad, don't put this speech in the tape. Edit it. So I'll sing the first line, which is a classic first line. It's oh my God, we're out of milk. And then just a smattering of applause. And then I do my thank you. No. You can't recognize a song from that because every song I do sounds like that. Oh my God, we're out of milk. Hey, thank you. I gotta do that again. Erase that one. Wait. I think a little lighter. Because it's just now Railroad Bill, right? Like I remember Railroad Bill. There's like 8 verses to that one. I'd like to do a tune off my next demo. Back to reality here. My Railroad Bill was a hard living man. He used to take his women 2 at a time. Everyone agreed he was the baddest engineer that ever driven down the Santa Fe line. His name was known from the folks back home to the tippy top of Telegraph Hill. And all the little boys, when they were sneaking cigarettes, they used to dream about the Railroad Bill. Oh, one day Bill was walking along and he saw a kitten stuck in a tree. When he saw it was the matter, he ran to get a ladder to set that kitty cat free. Bill said, no, ain't gonna do it. Ain't gonna climb up no tree. This is a stupid, stupid song, and no folk singer's gonna make a fool out of me. I said one day Bill was walking along and he saw a kitten stuck in a tree. Oh, and he saw what's the matter. He ran to get a ladder to set that kitty cat free. And Bill said, no, ain't gonna do it. Ain't gonna do what you said. This is a stupid, stupid song, and as far as I'm concerned, that cat can stay there till it's dead. I said, wait a minute, Bill, you can't argue with me. For God's sake, I just made you up. I got the pen in my hand, I want you up in that tree. I want that cat unstuck. Bill said, no, I hate cats. Ain't gonna climb for no cat. He said, why don't you have it save some beautiful girl who's been tied down on a railroad track. I said, maybe there'll be room in the 8th or 9th verse, but right now I want you up in that tree. I'm the writer, goddamn, I got the pen in my hand, and you're supposed to listen to me. He said, you asshole, why should I listen to you? You should be listening to me instead. He said, I'm a railroad man, and if I was real, I'd separate your face from your head. You ungrateful brute, I cried, you pushed me too far. I gotta show you I can do as I please. So an earthquake came, and it shook the whole terrain, and it brought Railroad Bill to his knees. And then a tidal wave broke, and everything got soaked, and Bill was almost completely washed away. And then a big green monster from the planet Neptune landed and bare Railroad Bill on the leg. I got the pen in my hand, I can do what I want. I'm a bright new young talent on the rise. So get your ass up that tree, or I swear you ain't gonna get out of my folk song alive. He said, you don't scare me. You might be funny, but you don't scare me. And if you don't leave me alone, I'm gonna tell everybody where you stole this melody. But before he could speak, his tongue fell out. He could not make a sound. Suddenly, he jumped on top of me, grabbed me by the neck, and he pulled me to the ground. And he hit me in the stomach, and he hit me in the face real hard, and I think he almost broke my nose. Just then, a lightning bolt came out of nowhere, hit him right between the eyes, and killed him instantly. Cat came down from the tree, had a bowl of warm milk, went to sleep for the night. Railroad Bill is survived by a wife and 3 small children. Dear God, I love to write.
Yeah, so which ideas are going to be?
We only have one idea, so it's sink or swim. We're jumping into the deep end.
Sure.
Okay, if you're at the tunnels, you say, is this the tunnel to New York?
Yes.
Say yes, and then you say, what's it like? If you're exiting the turnpike, as you pay, you tip the guy, as caller Ralph just did, and say, Happy Hanukkah. If you're entering the turnpike, you get your ticket from the guy, stay to the right, as always, stay to the right, and then leave Gavin a message. Hey, tell Gavin to bring the dessert tomorrow.
We're always looking for the collector furthest to the right.
Right.
And, that way we'll play the same thing
and
to the
do
same
do this
person.
Whether you have a phone or not, but if you have a phone, for God's sake, call 678-7743. The Parkway South, your line is, hey, there's a UFO back there. The Parkway North, your line is, I think I'm on the guest list. Dr. Wayne, put me on the guest list. And then they'll say, what guest list? And then you say, could you at least check? I'm on the guest list. Sort of insist that you're on the guest list.
Now, do you want me to, it's a 70-cent toll.
Yeah.
Do you want me just to hand them 95?
Yeah.
Say, just extra 25 cents.
No, hand them a dollar. Say, keep the change. Happy Hanukkah.
Do you want me to stay there so you hear what he said?
Yeah.
Oh, great. All right.
Okay. And then if you're heading north on the parkway, get to the right. Say, I think I'm on the guest list. If you're heading into New York through the tunnels, say, is this the tunnel to New York? They'll say yes. And then say, what's it like? And that's how it works. And you're about to hear live from the turnpike one of our minions. See, we're like the Wicked Witch
of
the West.
Here, guys. I'm coming up now.
Okay. This is like one of our winged monkeys.
We got to listen.
Okay.
As we speak. All right. One car. I'm next.
Oh, I'm getting excited. He's like a winged monkey.
It's a girl.
It's a girl.
No, it's a guy.
It's a guy or a girl.
Well, no, it's a big guy.
Oh, good.
Oh, great.
No, that's funny.
It's a young kid, though. He's young.
That makes the Hanukkah even funnier. The bigger they are, the less Jewish they probably
When's
are.
Hanukkah? The 18th.
Hey, you can ask him when Hanukkah is.
How you doing? Okay. Hey, there's an extra 25 cents in there for you. Happy Hanukkah. You're welcome, sir.
All right.
Bye now.
Okay.
You did a great job.
You did a great job.
Good job.
Thank you very much.
And you bill us for that 25 cents. Hey, are you heading into the city?
No, I'm going home. I'm going down to Flemington, New Jersey.
Hey, you know what's funny? When you get home, tell your wife, I've had enough. I want out. I want a divorce.
Yeah,
and we'll have everything.
Hey, I just had a baby 3 weeks ago.
No, that'll make it funnier. But make sure you call first. We'll have everybody tell their wife that. I've had enough. I want out.
I'll tell you what. I'll bring the phone in. I'll do it.
That'll be so funny if everybody does that.
All right, guys.
It'll work better than the Toll Booth Collector. We'll be spoofing on wives next.
Thanks.
Thanks very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye. You're on the air. You love the show.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Long-time listener, first-time caller.
First-time caller. Here I go.
Okay. Are you
all the way on the right? I'm going to pay with a dollar.
Okay. You're going to say keep the change?
No, I don't have exact change.
Where are you?
I am on the.
Where are you?
I don't know. I'm on the parkway.
Okay. Oh, you're on the parkway. Are you heading north or south? Are you heading north or south? Oh, hey, turn down your radio.
South.
Turn down your radio.
It's down.
So you're going to say there's a UFO back there.
The kids are going to say, yeah, I got three kids. In the
house. This will be perfect. The kids, because kids don't lie.
Let's hear a rehearsal.
Yeah, let's hear you all rehearse it.
What?
Tell your kids to rehearse it.
Okay, guys, are you ready? We're almost there. I'm going to say there's a UFO back there. And you guys say, yeah, there is. There's some weird lights. All right, let's.
Okay, and make it exciting, like they're using lasers.
All right, ready? Okay, here I come. I'm next.
Okay. And say they're using lasers. Make it scary. Don't let him see the phone.
How you doing? Listen, there's a UFO back there.
There's a UFO over there.
There's some really strange lights in the sky back there.
Yeah. Let them stay there. As long as they don't come over here.
As long as they don't stay over here. But they're coming south. You sure about that? Maybe you should check into it. Have a good holiday. All right.
Oh, excellent.
Okay, that was great. Hey, thank your kids, too. Hi. You're on the air. You love the show. It's you. I'm talking to you in the car. You.
Hi. Ray, I just got off the parkway going north, so.
Did you do the guest list deal?
Yeah, I did the guest list thing. I told the guy, I said, hi, I'm on the guest list. Dr. Wayne said put me on the guest list. I need to get through. So he said, yo, baby, you on the guest list. There's a party in my pants, honey. Come on in. Come right on in, baby. You on the guest list, girl. So
he said that?
Yeah, I wish I didn't do it. So that's what he said. I swear to God,
listen.
It was this younger black guy. I wasn't all the way to the right, but so.
Oh, so,
just,
it might, so it's probably the first time.
I got another party to go to.
Listen,
maybe
do you want some advice? I don't know you, and I'm an older guy, and I've been around, and I have some advice. Get back there tomorrow and marry that man.
And marry that man.
You're not going to do better than that man. He sounds.
For letting me into
he
his
sounds,
party for free because I was
sounds,
on the guest list.
He sounds funny. He sounds witty. He sounds alive. It's not every guy you're going to meet is going to have a party in his pants. Don't let this one.
I think it is every guy I meet who has a little party in his pants.
Don't let this one get away. That's all I'm telling you.
Yeah, all right, all right.
Thanks for trying.
Don't let that fish get away.
Yeah, okay, it's your loss. All right. You're going to spend the rest of your life wondering what life would have been like.
I know, I'll go find that winner. Yeah. I told him I'd be back for his party anyway.
Yeah.
So. I'll go find him.
I wonder
him.
If now listeners are finding, trying to
his party him. Might be in his chest pocket by that time.
That's
so,
right. You know. Hi, you're on the air.
I just got off the parkway.
Hey, heading north or south?
North. I got the old guy at the Bergen Toll Plaza.
Great. And what was his reaction?
He was so flustered. It's like some like old bald guy. And he was like, he had like a thick accent. He's like, no, he showed me a ticket. He's like, you need a ticket. I'm like, listen, I'm on the guest list. I don't need a ticket.
That was an encore episode clip show of 7 Second Delay featuring for the first 45 minutes the April Fool's Day episode from 1992 known as Confessions. This is WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope in New York City and Rockland County at 91.9 FM and online at WFMU.org. Stay tuned next for In Real Life with Emily and Kim Zilla.
Let's go back to 1954 with General Douglas MacArthur, and we're all aware of that's a household word, household name, everybody knows, and of course I lived during the period when he was active, and history has carried on his name. He was not a man to make flip or idle statements. During one of his press conferences, shortly after he retired from the Army, he was asked at that time to give his opinion as to the chances for mankind's continuation on this earth now that we had invented these horrendous weapons, such as atomic bombs and hydrogen bombs. And he dropped a little bombshell of his own. He said, the greatest danger to mankind's continuation on this earth, he said, will not come from international strife. He said, eventually, all of the nations of the world will have to band together to face a greater threat, and that is a threat from outer space.
Good evening, lifers. You're listening to In Real Life. I'm Emily.
And I am, and I am Kim Zilla. This, my cold is really making my reverb kind of
something. I don't know. Your voice is very sultry
Hello.
Tonight.
Hello, everybody.
Good. Wish I had a cold.
I wish I had a cold. I'll give you one if you want it.
I just sound kind of squawky.
How about that? Did you get it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I know I say this every week, but I'm really excited about this week's episode.
I'm so excited about this week's episode.
This one was a fun one to edit.
It was really fun to edit. It was really fun to do. Tonight on In Real Life.
Yeah, what are we doing, Emily?
For the very first time ever on this program, we are talking to an alien abduction expert.
Yes, we are. Oh, I like the bed music. That's kind of creepy.
Yeah, I thought, you know, give us a little atmosphere.
Yeah. Tonight we've got David Michael Jacobs. And he's going to introduce himself, but he's the real deal. He's got a lot of experience.
Over 30 years of experience.
Over 40 years.
Is it over 40 years? Yes. In alien abduction research under his belt. Which is a lot of time studying this subject. And he's written several books about it. And he's talked to, I mean, just dozens, dozens and dozens and dozens of abductees. And so if you want to know anything at all about alien abduction, guys, this is the program to listen to.
Give them just a highlight of the topics of our episodes, like the little things here.
So we've got
this is great.
Types of aliens, if you're interested in that. We've got They Walk Among Us. We've got the first abductees.
Oh yeah, that's the creepiest.
We have
it's all sorts of creepiness.
It's all sorts of creepy.
So my
the greater threat.
My thoughts for all of you are, I know this could be a dark subject for many of you, and I will say this. It's only a dark subject if you believe. If not, it's a wonderful science fiction story.
And that, dear listeners, is up to you.
Hop on our playlists and comments board by going to wfmu.org and click playlists and comments. So far we've got Melinda and Ken from Hyde Park. Oh, and Mark 15.
He believes,
hasn't even heard the interview yet.
I just ask that everyone go into this with an open mind, and I think you might be surprised what you learn.